Thursday night, and this is Real Monsters, and I am S.K. Barrett, and I am joined tonight by Wes Hobrick, as usual, the one who does the real...
Hello, monsters. Hello, hello.
It is black as midnight out, and it's only 5:30, and it's just...
Yep. Sucks.
Daylight savings time is the stupidest thing in the world.
It is. I would like to know where the hell they're saving all those hours to. Must be in some government bunker.
Well, here's the problem. I know this is a sidetrack, okay? And let's, while we're doing the sidetrack, let's go ahead and just put our M of the week up there. The problem with represented by daylight savings time is the idea that some hours of the day are more valuable than others.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
absolutely.
I was going to say it's an industrial era fallacy, but it's really goes back to agriculture. If you make your living and survival out of agriculture, some hours of the day really are more valuable than others.
Oh, yeah.
It's a valid thing, right? You have to take care of the animals. You got to work when the sun's out and you can see, and you got to get up and you got to get cracking. In our modern society, however, 6 a.m. is not a better hour than 10 a.m. to do office work.
I am being told by a comment on Facebook that you are not exactly audible.
I apologize. I had my microphone tipped away from my face.
Okay. There we go.
Why are we not? I'm not seeing any live chat.
Oh, that was actually from Facebook that I heard that.
Good. That comment was completely accurate. Because I had my microphone lifted up. Whoop, whoop. Better now.
Yep. I can hear you better now, too.
Okay.
Anyway. Yeah, thinking about that whole harvest thing, I actually went to a high school that only had about 400 in it, and it did not have a football team. Why? Because of the harvest.
Oh, yeah.
So... Yep, I know exactly how it is.
Yeah, my forebears and some of my cousins and aunts and uncles were in agriculture and, farmers. And, that's a tough life, and you are dependent upon the sun to get your work done.
Oh, yeah.
Largely. I mean, there are some technologies that can help you harvest after dark and that kind of stuff. But by and large, it is still a daylight-driven industry.
Absolutely.
But that's
not my school.
That's not true in the city, though.
No, not at all. I mean, my school really made up for it by cultivating a kick-ass basketball team.
There you go.
I mean, they were very good with that. In fact, went all the way to state the year I graduated, so.
Yeah, but the idea that the guy who comes in early is the better worker, why? Why? If he works 8 hours and he starts at 6, why are his hours better than a guy who comes in at 10 o'clock and works the same amount of hours and gets the same amount done?
Oh, I totally agree when you're talking about that kind of occupation. When you're looking at others, like, let's say, conventional beat journalism, yeah, it can be the early guy who gets the scoop.
Sure.
But other than that...
If you're in marketing or accounting or software development, it doesn't... there aren't better hours. There are hours when everybody's in the office. Sure, that counts. You don't want to be missing out on that. But come on. And daylight savings time is, if it was ever useful, I mean, and the notion that, you know, oh, we want kids to be able to go home from school when the sun's out. So adjust your start times. Jesus, this is not difficult.
Yeah. No, it's not. Not at all. But yeah, the
I have so little respect for school districts. They're just morons.
Yeah, unfortunately, and that gets into a whole other topic of why they're morons.
Yeah.
But to get into what we have today, it's interesting for the sole reason that it's very undercovered, the cases we'll be looking at.
Yeah.
Most of what I was able to find with it was very hyper-localized to Toledo, Ohio, where most of it
occurred. I had not heard of these guys. I heard them mentioned on a show.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't heard of him either. Yeah.
I even asked a friend of mine who's a lawyer in Ohio, or she was a lawyer. She's retired now. She had never even heard of him.
Wow.
But, you know, I mean, geographically, it's a wide state, too. So.
Yeah, it's a good-sized state, yeah.
But it also ends with one hell of a, I don't know what you would call it, Kafka-esque ending.
Ooh.
But
I'm all tingly in anticipation. I like twists. I like twist endings.
Me too.
So let's
me
let's,
too,
let's
but,
get to that.
But the where I started off with, and most of my sources, because they're hyper-localized,
yeah,
were from The Blade, Toledo's newspaper.
Okay.
And they did some really good coverage on it. And the first one that I came across was from February 26, 1981. Headline, Body of Missing Girl Found in Theater. And that was 12-year-old Don Renee Backus, whom we have a picture of.
Oh, yeah. We got a whole slideshow on Don.
Yeah. She was a seventh grader at the nearby Jesu school.
Seventh grade?
Yeah. Seventh grade. God. She had been missing since the weekend before. She was last seen at 10:30 p.m. Saturday. Now, that map right there is a map of, I think, about three quarters of the victims and where they were dumped. And what I did with that was, instead of marking each and every single one out, I started one and then I did a driving route to the second.
Okay.
And then a driving route, so on, going downward. But yeah, that is Dawn, the brunette. Let's see. She's found in the basement of the former State Theater at 2460 Collingwood Boulevard at 8:20 p.m. We have a picture of the theater, too.
Yep, I'm getting that up.
And what was most bizarre about this is an anonymous tip is what led the police to the theater.
Hmm.
And we actually have a bit of a, transcript of that call. So the officer picks up.
I didn't figure out how to play that.
Oh, yeah, we don't have it in a file, but I have it written down.
Okay. No, we talked about playing the, it's on YouTube, right?
Oh, that was for actually a different guy, for the weepy voice killer.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
All right, but we, so we have a transcript. We have a transcript for this.
Yes. The call comes in at about 7:56 Wednesday, and the caller says, "I think there's a body in the basement of the State Theater." And the officer asks him his name, where he says, "I really don't want to get involved." And when the officer asks how he knew there was a body, he said, quote, "just take my word for it," and hung up.
Okay.
And as far as I can tell, they never figured out who that was, who called that in.
It's hard to, you know, there's not a lot of information there to go from. Didn't give away anything in the call.
No.
And it looks like the place was, you know, boarded up.
Actually, it wasn't boarded up, and that's an interesting thing. The uniform officers got there and found a rear entrance. They found the body about 30 feet from the stairs into the basement. There was blood splattered around 10 yards from there. And now there was a small room nearby all of this where more blood spots were found, and a table with the dust on it disturbed, as though a struggle had taken place. The State Theater had plenty of no trespassing signs, but not boarded up or locked.
Not even locked?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. So anybody could just wander in there, and I'm sure people did.
Yes. Yes, I'm sure it was a haven for the homeless, especially considering it's February.
Right.
And it's cold outside. But the front windows were broken. The Collingwood Boulevard entrance to the former lobby was standing open at the time. The basement contained, of course, a lot of debris, wine bottles, lumber, and the like. And police, they entered through the steel double doors at the stage end on Machen Street. And those opened with no difficulty. And near that entrance, there was a flight of stairs leading to the basement and a corridor of dressing rooms. The corridor, in turn, led to what they called a former lounge.
Oh, so this was a stage theater, not a former stage theater, not a former movie theater.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Stage slash vaudeville, that right. sort of thing. But yeah, it led them to the former lounge, and that's where they found Don Back's body. One officer said there was much blood throughout. And going to another article from the next day with the Toledo Blade, the investigators were still seeking a murder weapon. At first, because she was found fully clothed in that basement, okay. and her skull had been crushed in. Ugh. So they assumed some sort of, you know, blunt force weapon.
Yeah.
And I don't think it would be unreasonable to assume that it was a crime of opportunity. That they just grabbed something from inside the basement to do it. But the guys who did it were apparently smart enough to take the weapon with them. Because they had a hell of a time finding it. And they also added, the coroner, that she had been sexually molested.
Sounds great, I don't know why, man. They...
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't necessarily add up, though. Why would you leave her clothes on if that were the fact?
I don't know. Maybe they thought You know, who knows what goes through. Why would you do it in the first place? Much less, I mean, if she's dead, you can't really cover it up like that. That's what I was...
Well, this is true.
You know?
Unless they molested her in a different spot and then brought her to the theater to kill her.
Hmm.
A possibility, anyway.
More likely to get noticed doing that.
Yeah, this is true. I don't know. But Dawn had been last seen at a local pizza joint and youth hangout called Fat Daryl's over on Secker Avenue. And this was only about 3 miles from her home, too.
Well, three miles is a long ways on foot, though, for a 12-year-old.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, this is true. And apparently the Cook brothers had picked her up after there was some sort of snafu with the ride that she was supposed to hop on to get back to her home.
What kind, was she, somebody supposed to pick her up, or is she taking a bus, or what? Do you know?
I believe it was a civilian picking her up in the car.
Okay, so like a...
From what I could tell.
Some friend or you know.
Yeah.
Something like
friend,
that.
Friend, family member, etc. Yeah. Let's see. They were also still searching for her ski vest and her purse at the time.
Hmm.
She had one stepbrother and two stepsisters. Dawn did.
So did this, you know, do you get the feeling like this was, you know, caused a bit of a stir in the community? I mean, 12-year-olds don't just get murdered all the time. Not even today.
I think it definitely caused a stir, but it didn't dial down the intensity of what the Cooks were doing. So we move about 5 months into the future, and that is when we find a murdered man and woman. Denise Slotkowski, age 21, and Scott Moulton, age 21. They both worked at a nearby grocery store where Scott was an assistant manager and Denise was a cashier. And they were both known to be good employees, known to be very sociable. And on the night of April 5th, after work, they were supposed to go to a local restaurant to imbibe with their coworkers, you know, and have a little fun after work.
So which one here? I'm going to show you this photo with all the faces on it. So which two are we talking about?
Yep, I will let you know when we get
lag
to
time. here we go.
I'm waiting. Scott is the one at the farthest left-hand corner.
Bottom left.
Yes, bottom left, and then I believe Denise is the one right by him.
Okay.
On the bottom left. And these two were found shot to death April 3rd in the trunk of his car that was parked at a local apartment complex, which we have a picture of, the Fountain Square Apartments.
Yeah.
On Navarre Avenue.
There it is. Coming right up.
Yep, My site doesn't load as fast. I'm going to refresh.
Well, no, it's just the lag time between when I make a change in OBS and when it shows up on YouTube.
Oh, okay. I thought it was my shitty internet.
No,
yeah,
no.
That is the Fountain Square Apartments today. I actually borrowed that from a realtor's website. So, yeah, they found them shot to death in the trunk of their car.
Cecilia asked if they targeted both genders, and clearly from this couple, they did.
They did, but with a caveat. Whenever they attacked the males, it was purely pragmatic. It was to get them out of the way so they could have
their way
with the females.
They were with the female, and they wanted to eliminate the males. They didn't go after males by themselves.
Correct.
It's a good question.
Yeah, it really is. Both worked at the Center Square supermarket in nearby Oregon, Ohio. The assistant manager called them outstanding kids before choking up. And the Fountain Square Apartments is less than 3/4 miles from the store.
Okay, remind everybody, what year are we talking about?
We are talking about 1973. Now, the coroner's investigator, Tim Fish, both had been shot with a small caliber handgun while in the trunk. He could tell that they had been shot there by the position of the bodies. And it's interesting, there was a separate murder done by the Cook brothers where they realized they only had one bullet. So you know what they did?
They put them, stacked them?
They made the couple embrace.
Yeah.
And then they shot them.
Through and through?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a new level of cold. And Coroner Missionary says it appears Moulton was shot first, as Slotkowski's hand was found over his head wound. See, Scott was tall with long hair, brunette. Or excuse me, Denise was tall with long hair, brunette. She wore clogs that she was known for, clomp, clomp, clomp around the store. And Moulton was tall, thin, and mustached.
I think this is the separate photo of him coming up.
Yeah, most likely. And one fellow employee, after they discovered all this, said, "We'd just like to get our hands on the guy who did it." Understandably. There is Scott Moulton, indeed. Yes, Cicela asks if there's a photo. Yeah, we have quite a few courtroom photos and booking photos.
Yes, but follow along in the story. We don't know who did it yet.
True.
So we're going to save Very those true. Pictures. I mean, we know now, but in the story, we don't know. The city doesn't. City just knows that three people are dead.
Yeah.
And they changed up MOs. They used a blunt force in the first one and shooting in the second and third.
Yes.
Which
yes.
typically is a good way to throw the cops off your trail.
It is. Number four that we get to, this one, the headline on the New York Times, September 20th, 1981, developer is slain in attempt to prevent rape of daughter. Prominent land developer Peter Sawicki shot to death while trying to help daughter and boyfriend, which I believe we have his picture, Sawicki's.
I'm guessing
it's
this guy.
He's
going to
be the oldest.
Oh, the crew cut guy or the guy with the hair?
I can't remember. I remember he well dressed.
Oh, well, this guy was in the list of the nine, so I think I got it.
Yeah, yeah. That would be him. Yep, that is Peter Sawicki. He was shot to death while trying to help daughter and boyfriend Todd Sabo. Todd Sabo, age 21, was critically wounded. The attack occurred as the two, Sabo and Sawicki's daughter, were sitting in a van drinking. And they came up and were accosted by these two black guys who wanted to rob them. This occurred only two blocks from the Ottawa Hills police station, too.
Wow.
By the way. Yeah.
Well, they say that crime is really high around police stations anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and this is known as an affluent area, too. Ottawa Hills.
Well, if he's a developer, that makes sense.
Yep. He lived very close to the police station. But his daughter, Leslie Sawicki, age 20, was able to extricate herself from what's going on. She takes off, finds a phone, calls the police, and calls her dad. And Peter Sawicki, being the father that he was and being understandably pissed off and in guard mode, gets his gun and goes down there. What's going on? While Todd is still, you know, trying to fight these guys. And Sawicki ends up taking a bullet to the throat from all this.
Wow.
Let's see. Yeah, and he arrived, of course, before the police. And the assailant ultimately fled after he shot Sawicki.
Was it one guy or two assailants, right?
Two assailants on this one.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
But we should have a witness now, right? Two witnesses.
Yes. Yes, and that actually gets into the very Kafka-esque ending of this, which we'll get to.
Okay.
But the next bit is in The Blade, The Slaying Solved, April 27, 2000. The first murder was actually in 1974. And after that, a total of eight, all sexually motivated, all motivated by race as well. There wasn't a single black victim here. And the investigators have said,
as we've said,
go ahead.
Yeah, and as we've said many times in the past, that is very unusual. Serial killers tend to hunt within their own race. And if you've ever watched Criminal Minds, they tell you the same thing. Or maybe that's where I got it from. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's statistically true that most do.
Yeah.
But, this is where it's solved, and we actually get adjudications on every single crime that they were involved with from this. But let's see. Yeah, the brothers reached an agreement with prosecutors, pled guilty to the 1980 murder of Tom Gordon. He was 24, and they also pled guilty to the attempted aggravated homicide of his girlfriend who was 18 who survived. So what, and in return...
Okay.
Sorry?
So what year did they get arrested?
This... one of them was actually arrested in 1982 on a petty crime.
Okay, but for the murders.
But for the murders in 2000.
2000?
Yeah.
20 years.
Yep. So they gave the police detailed info on the further murders that both or one were involved in. And they honestly, they thought that these murders would stay cold, if not for that. The 1980 charges that I just talked about will remain the only ones per the agreement.
Hmm.
So you've got a total of 7 people, at least, whose murders have never been charged. Anthony, age 51, got 15 to life for Gordon, and he was already doing, this is the 82 arrest, 15 to life for Peter Sawicki. Nathaniel, age 42, got 21 to 75 years for attempted murder and 2 counts of kidnapping. The plea calls for judicial review on February 13th, 2018. Let's see. And now here's a more total list of the victims. Number one was Vicky Small, age 22. And she was killed December 20th, 1973. 6 gunshot wounds to the head, beaten and raped. Found in Ottawa Park, the affluent area. The left to right on that picture is Anthony and Nathaniel.
Okay.
The second murder, May 14th, 1980... was Tom Gordon, age 24. Shot, found in his trunk in a, I can't read my own writing. found in the trunk in a parking lot of a mall off McLean Street. I think we have a picture of that mall, too.
Yeah, we do.
It says Tops.
Tops, yeah.
Yeah. His girlfriend was raped and stabbed, but survived. Both cooks were involved in that one. Number 3, Connie Sue Thompson, age 19. That was January 17th, 1981. Frozen, found in a creek under a bridge in western Lucas County. That's the county of Toledo, where Toledo is the county seat. Raped and stabbed, and again, both cooks were involved. Number 4, Don Backus, age 12. February 21, 1981. Tortured and raped, both cooks were involved. Number 5, Scott Moulton, 21. Denise Slotkowski, 21. Denise raped, both shot execution style in trunk. Anthony Cook acted alone. Number 6, August 2nd, 1981. Stacy Balinek, 21, and Daryl Cole, 21. Both severely beaten. Found in trunk of his car 2 blocks from his home. Balinek raped. Anthony Cook acted alone. And number 7, Peter Sawicki, 43. September 18th, 1981. daughter and boyfriend assaulted and parked van in West Toledo. Anthony acted alone, convicted in 1982. And that is, as far as we know, is all of them. But the FBI, looking into their history, suspects that they were involved in much, much more. These guys were long-haul truck drivers.
Oh.
They spent time in Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Texas before the arrest in 1981.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's, but they were only known, and known to have been involved with stuff in the Toledo area. That's the only thing that they can prove.
Yes, that's the only thing that they can prove there. But this doesn't quite end, and I got to bring up the source for it.
So how did they get caught? I think we kind of skipped over that.
Toledo, Ohio serial killer. You know, they...
I mean, people don't... They don't just turn themselves in.
I mean, they got caught, I think, through good old-fashioned police work through most of it. And especially with Peter Sawicki.
Oh, Wikipedia, if it can be believed, left some fingerprints behind.
Yeah. Yeah, and... I mean, a few of those. But Sawicki, I think, kind of turned their attention to, hey, we got to solve this, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's sad to say, but a rich white man causing that. But now this story gets even weirder.
And just to be fair to the cops on this, you know, in the late 70s and early 80s, there was no computerized fingerprint system. So if you pulled a fingerprint off of a crime, somebody had to decide to compare that to suspects. You didn't just go and say, oh, we got a match.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You had to reason to go and say, hey, go get the fingerprints for Anthony and let's see if they match.
But what is so weird about this, in 2018, Nathaniel Cook is granted release from prison.
Oh, really?
Yes. He was granted release, and guess what? He is living less than 1,000 feet from a school.
How is he not a registered sex offender?
He is.
How is he allowed to do that?
I haven't the foggiest idea, but you had one news organization who actually measured the distance from the center of his house to the closest school, and it's 678 feet. Here's from the 13 ABC. One of the men, part of what some would call Toledo's most notorious serial killers, is now listed as a sex offender. He's living within 1,000 feet of a Toledo school, and it's totally legal. Viewers have wanted to know how Nathaniel Cook could be so close to a school. Now the 13 ABCI team is getting those neighbors some answers. It's probably not an answer someone to hear, but Cook is completely legal where he is living today. For his part in several murders and sexual assaults in the 80s, Cook only received a 20-year sentence in 2000 as a part of a plea deal. After detailing the attacks, the prosecutors agreed to the shorter sentence for Cook. He got out last year and moved to Central Avenue near Collingwood in Toledo, which is right near the Old West Academy, We mapped it in the center of his home to the center of the school is 694 feet. People living nearby noticed and they're worried he's too close to the school.
Well, yeah.
Cook is registered as a sex offender, but because his crime occurred before July of 2003, he does not need to be 1,000 feet from a school.
Oh, weird. So the old man, so to speak, is grandfathered in.
Yeah, essentially.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
I can't believe he was let out at all.
Yeah, and you know, I think the biggest takeaway from this, because you had a couple of these guys say that, racial abuse in prison by guards,
right,
is what turned me into this. Well, bullshit, you would have killed people anyway. But on the same note, I think it speaks to why each and every one of us needs to stand up when we see that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
When we...
Yeah, I mean, you... Look, injustice is injustice no matter where you find it, no matter who's perpetrating it, and no matter who the victim is. It's either injustice or it's not. It's
right.
Really, so you can't allow it to exist.
Right. Exactly. The only thing that it takes to let evil exist is for good men to do nothing.
Yep.
As I think it was Edmund Burke said.
Burke, right. And evildoers and immoral people, they depend on good people saying nothing.
Yep. They do. That's how they thrive.
Yeah. And, I mean, and it's a, of course, it, yeah, violence is, I'm not one of those who says violence is never the answer, because sometimes you have to go commit violence against the bad guys to stop them.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, sure, sure.
But you can't allow injustice to stand.
No.
But it takes courage to stand up to it.
Right.
So go get some at the store. Not courage is something you either learn it as a young person growing up that it's a valuable thing, or you don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's sad when people learn the opposite of it too. But we got to be willing to fight it.
Now, Wikipedia suggests that the younger brother was not a criminal until he started hanging around more with the older brother.
Yeah, which is entirely possible. The younger brother, he was more pro-social, I guess you could say.
Well, he had
a lot of stuff.
Let's put it this way: he hadn't been arrested until he. So there was no record of him being involved in any criminality until he got involved with his older brother.
Mm-hmm.
After spending some years apart.
Which it kind of makes you wonder if it's another instance of the filet à deux that we talked about.
Yeah.
Last week with Dean Corll, you know, sucking him in like that.
There are many cases of people who would not be criminals except for their association with some buddy who's really fucked in the head.
Oh, yeah. You know, going back to our show last week, I'm convinced that David Brooks and Henley likely wouldn't have killed anybody if not for that dynamic,
right?
That they had.
Yeah. Yeah. Fred and Rose West, one of the psychiatrists who interviewed her, Rose, said that she, although she was, you know, not exactly mentally stable, she had shown no signs of any criminal behavior before meeting Fred.
Mm-hmm.
And they were one of the worst.
This is true.
So, you know, it's one of the things I've said many times. You want to change your life, change who you hang out with.
Yep.
One way or another, it'll change.
Yeah, and make sure that you remember the old aphorism that if you lay down with dogs, you get fleas.
Or if you pick up one end of the stick, you pick up the other.
Yep, this is true too.
You know, there was a case, not to sidetrack too much, but I think it's kind of related. When my kids were teenagers, there was a case in southern Utah of these two teenagers, buddies, and one buddy shows up at the other buddy's house in a car, and they go for a joyride. Well, it turns out the first buddy stole the car, right?
Uh-oh.
So they're, and this is in a tiny town in southern Utah, and they get pulled over by a cop, and the driver who stole the car pulls out a gun and murders the cop on the spot.
Oh, shit.
So now this kid who just wanted to go for a ride with his buddy was on the hook for capital murder because he was an accessory. Because
wow.
He knew it was stolen.
Wow.
Dang. And just like that, with doing nothing else but going for a ride with the guy he thought it was his friend, his life's over.
Man, it's sad too.
So you get very sad. It's very sad for all involved. But it was a very good lesson to teach my teenage kids that, look, you think you're making, you know, innocent choices, and they're not always. You gotta think about things.
Yep.
And
absolutely.
You know, you think you're making a small little innocent choice, and then your entire life changes course. You know.
Yep.
I mean, the person who was supposed to pick up Don at the pizza place. How do they live with that?
Oh, yeah. And that's just got to be horrible. They talked to a bit of her friends in some of the interview footage I was watching. And, yeah, and they still live with that sort of hell every single day.
Yeah.
And what's even sadder is Dawn's home wasn't far from there either.
It's
and she lived on Secker Road.
You know, they say the history of the world, the gates of history turn on small hinges. Well, that's very true for individuals as well.
Mm-hmm.
Very often, the things that turn our lives in the largest way are this just infinitesimal events that end up causing, you know, a cascade of events that really make huge changes or consequences.
Oh, yeah.
For the good or for the bad. Could be either way.
Yep. I couldn't agree more.
All right. Well, this was fascinating.
Yeah, this is a hell of a case. I honestly didn't think I'd get a whole lot considering the sources, but I've got mountains of books here on race and criminality, too.
Yeah.
That I'm going to work into the written version of this that we'll post on the show's Facebook page along with the embed for the show.
Awesome.
Within it. So.
Cool. Appreciate all your hard work on that stuff. You do a great job.
Yeah, my pleasure. You do a great job, too.
Aww.
Aww.
All right. Mm. Thanks once again. Go Seahawks.
Yep.
Good night, everybody.
Go Seahawks. Good night. Wow, 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 wow.